Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Education Minister Razia Jiddin has announced that schools will reopen in stages from October 3rd, where students will take turns to attend school and attendance is going to be set at 50% of classroom capacity. This is all to reduce the risk of transmission of COVID-19. Now, Malaysian schools, according to UNESCO's Global Monitoring of School Closures, has been estimated to have been shuttered for approximately 50 weeks. Now, beyond the plan to reopen schools, we're wondering whether there is a plan to address education recovery holistically, that is, in terms of addressing learning loss, the impact to learners' physical and mental health, as well as their social and socio-emotional well-being. We're also wondering whether this is an opportunity to look at educational reforms in Malaysia. We're going to have this conversation with Chan Sun Sing, who is the CEO of Teach for Malaysia. He joins us on the show today. Sun Sing, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you joining us today. Again, we want to kind of begin this conversation with a broad look, Sun Sing, to take a look at what perhaps the pandemic has demonstrated about the resilience or even the weaknesses of our education system. I'm wondering, you know, we've had more than a year and a half now for educators to deliberate. What have you observed, Sun Sing?
Yeah, hi, Melissa and Sharad. It's good to be back. You know, I think that COVID has disrupted education all over the world in unprecedented ways, right? And I don't think that any country has had the perfect solution to handling the COVID-19 situation. And I think that the research that is coming in shows that, you know, all of the distance learning solutions, even in the most connected countries, have not been able to make up for in-person learning, right? So it's just an indicator that this has just been a really big and such a challenging situation for the world at large, right? And I think that when we think about what we've seen out of how Malaysia has handled the situation, you know, I think that there are some there have been existing challenges that in the system already. You know, we understand that there are gaps that the ministry has been trying to close for many years, right? And equity gaps in terms of achievement of students, whether that is across the lines of the urban-rural divide, whether that is against the socioeconomic status or even against the gender divide. These are things that the Ministry of Education has been, gaps that the Ministry of Education has been trying to close. And I think the challenge that we've seen with COVID is that all of these gaps are just massively, massively exacerbated as a result of the school closures. But I think that a big thing that COVID-19 has gotten Malaysia and education systems around the world to really reconsider more deeply is, what actually is the purpose of education? And what kind of education do we want our students to be having? And what we've then seen is that when students are experiencing classrooms where you have a very traditional form of teaching. So for those of us that grew up in the public education system, you know, the very traditional style, we call it chalk and talk, right? Where a teacher is writing on the whiteboard and delivering all of the information, and your job as a student is to download all of that information. We've seen that in an online setting, that really doesn't work, and that kids will choose to walk away if they're subjected to that sort of teaching. And so there's a call for a need to transform or to accelerate the transformation of teaching and learning and the experience of what kids are getting in their education.
So I'm saying, you know, you talk about, you know, these really important issues. I always wonder what incentives there are for policymakers, for politicians, and some of the key stakeholders in the system, namely teachers and schools and headmasters, to actually institute change. I mean, I would love to see a survey to find out how many politicians or MPs, sitting MPs, have their kids in the public-funded schools as opposed to the private schools. And I say that not just to be cheeky, but I think that there is a disconnect between politicians and the system that they oversee. And I wonder whether, you know, you have thoughts on the push, because it doesn't seem like this crisis that we've had over the year and a half has actually been an incentive for any kind of innovation in education, and certainly not coming from the political leadership.
Yeah, you know, I think that what we have seen is that there has been pockets of some very exciting innovation in terms of teachers figuring out how to mobilize technology, how to use technology in ways to really engage their students during this time. And I think that one thing that's exciting is the opportunity to see how technology could potentially transform education in Malaysia moving forward, right? The challenge that we will see is really how to your point about incentivizing the usage of technology is when we go back to the physical classrooms, what we saw last year and at the beginning of this year is that often it was very easy, or it was the most common thing for classes to revert back to the very traditional forms where there wasn't a usage of technology because there isn't the supporting infrastructure to enable that. So there definitely needs to be more political will around it, right? And I think that one of the things that we really need to invest in is supporting our teachers and ensuring that our teachers are upskilled to be able to meet the needs arising out of the pandemic, but just in general, how they're going to be educating kids for the 21st century. And I think that if anything, that's really where the major investment needs to go into, you know.
But I want to stop you there, because I know you're trying to put a positive spin on this, and I know, because you need, as you know, somebody who works for an organization that interfaces with the ministry, that you can't directly criticize the Ministry of Education mainstream educators. But I think there's a problem. I think we, in many ways, Malaysia's reform agenda never goes forward because of the lack of honest criticism, I think, in the public sphere. But I want to come back to you on the question of incentive. I was talking about incentivizing politicians, not technology use as such. And when you look at the many instances over the last year with teachers in particular, I mean, empowering teachers is one thing, but the National Union of Teaching Professions is very powerful. And what they have demonstrated last year over a number of issues is that reluctance to take criticism, to embrace new norms. They're very defensive, and I wonder if with those kind of attitudes, can reform actually be implemented?
A massive thing that needs to happen across the education system, and which is what Teach for Malaysia stands for, is really how do we empower leadership across the system. And I think that the reality of our system is that it has often been, it has started off as a very centralized system. And we've seen that being a massive challenge in the pandemic, right? Because schools don't have the autonomy to make decisions that meet the needs of the community, even though they probably understand the needs of their community the best because they're closest to the challenges that their students face. So the Ministry of Education is highly centralized in their decision making, and education in Malaysia is very politically driven. And so on the topic of empowerment, I think it is really also about ensuring that that the professionals who run the Ministry of Education really do have a strong enough say in order to sustain reform. I think it's a very, very institutional issue that needs to be addressed, because often what happens as well is that Because progression within the Ministry of Education is very time-bound, often by the time someone gets to the top to be, let's say, the Director General of Education, they often are close to retirement, so have about 1 to 2 years to serve. And so that's a really, really small period to be able to make change in education. And typically, if you want to see something happen in education, you're going to need a minimum of 5 years to 6 years, if not an entire schooling cycle of 11 years. So these 1 to 2 year turnovers are not helpful. But if we don't change the tenure period, we need to empower the professionals, the director generals, to be able to have a sustained response.
To interrupt you, I find that fascinating, Sun Sing, because I'm just wondering, you know, since we're talking about the appetite for reform, is reform in the education system something that you think the public wants? I'm just wondering how aggressively we can implement reform in the education system. We've seen with the Pakatan Harapan tenure during their time in Putrajaya that reform was not well accepted, particularly aggressive reform was not well accepted. Do you think that educational reform is something that might go down well with the public, or is this what is considered to be a political hot potato that nobody wants to touch? Let's not rock the boat. Let's just keep going on the way we've been going on for decades now and continue to survive without actually addressing something that you said a bit earlier, the kind of education that we want.
Melissa, the boat is sinking, and this, I think, is the problem.
Right, exactly. Sun Sing, what do you think?
So, I mean, I differ with you on that, Melissa. And I think that in the Pakatan Harapan administration, people actually did want reform. I think a lot of people wanted reform and were more interested in education reform than in many, many years in our recent history. And we're actually demanding for it. But I think the challenge is, do we know what is necessary in education for us to progress, right? And I think that that's where, I think it's a two-way street, right? Like, there are changes that need to be made, but oftentimes those changes can be unpopular on both sides of the coin, right? So for example, the UBSR abolishment recently, that's a really contentious topic, because for the longest time, or maybe in all of our existence as an education system, we've relied so heavily on high stakes standardized testing, and so that has then been the equation of what a good education looks like, right? So by then removing that, there needs to be enough education or public awareness as to what the alternatives are, and there are many viable alternatives that do exist. So there, I think it is a two-way street. I think the public definitely wants reform in education, but are they aware enough about what the ministry, number one, is trying to do? So, for example, through the Malaysian Education Blueprint, is that being communicated effectively enough to the public? And I think the thing that probably needs to happen more is just more dialogue. And to your point earlier, Sherrod, about, you know, defensiveness and criticism, I think that there isn't enough space for dialogue between the public and the system at large to be able to make sense of things together.
A good point. Sun Sing, we're going to take a quick break, but after this, let's come back and continue this conversation. Chan Sun Sing, CEO of Teach Malaysia, is on the show. We'll be back with more, so stay tuned to consider this. Hello, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sherrod Kutin. Let's continue our conversation with the CEO of Teach for Malaysia, Chan Sun Sing. Just before the break, we talked about the appetite for educational reform. And I just want to come back to the present, where I think a lot of what's happening is just teachers and learners are just trying to keep their head above water. I want to talk to you about the reopening of schools and what that means. Yes, it's kind of picking up where we left off, but what happened to the past 1.5 years? Let's take a look at the learning loss and how we perhaps have we measured what the capacity of learning loss is in Malaysia, and what have we done in terms of trying to mitigate its consequences? Sun Seng?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that that will be the biggest challenge in the return to schools, not just in the short term, right? But then I think this is a multi-year challenge that we're going to need to address. The Malaysian estimated learning losses are something to the tune of 80 billion ringgit per year in GDP losses in terms of a less skilled workforce, right, as a result of this disruption. But the reality is that we don't know what that looks like at this point in time. There hasn't been enough significant assessment to be able to determine this, and especially when we've been in home-based learning mode, that's been a challenge to be able to assess effectively, because not every kid is even able to access learning at this point in time, right? So when we do eventually bring all kids back to school, it will be really important for us to be able to assess formatively where children are at, and then to be able to tailor learning to be able to meet their needs. And so I think, you know, one of the things that is and so I'm a supporter of the abolishment of UBSR. And I think that one of the things that removing a high stakes exam does is that it allows teachers to then focus more specifically on what the kids need, instead of trying to make sure that they're prepared to just sit for one examination. So the ministry launched a plan, I think, back in August, about recovery, and there was a focus. There were a number of things that they stated that needs to be focused on. Number one is the literacy and numeracy restoration program for kids in the lowest level of primary school, so standard 1 to 3. A focus on classroom assessment that will allow teachers to make sure that they are really tailoring learning to the needs of their students. And they have also announced the need for a system in which they can have access to all of the learning materials online. So the ministry does have a digital learning platform at this point in time, but one of the things that doesn't exist is the content that teachers can use. And so they've announced that that's something that they want to be investing in.
Right, Sun Seng, sorry if I interrupt you, but you know, I'm going to be that annoying journalist who has one factoid, is going to be, you know, repeating it over and over again. What is that? That, you know, some time ago it was said that Malaysian students, to the extent that they spend 12 years in school, only got 9 years worth of education. I don't know to what extent that still holds true, at least to the point of before the pandemic struck. And it seems to me that there are always great plans and blueprints, and if everything goes as you say, the question was, why this resolve to deal with the pandemic period wasn't applied during the earlier period? Why did we have such a disastrous outcomes? Why did we have such disastrous outcomes in learning prior to this, and why was it ignored?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that I think that if we've looked over time, so has been this massive plan that the ministry has endeavored to transform, right, learning outcomes in the system at large since 2013 till 2025. And if we do look at the blueprint, the system has made change and it has improved over time. So Malaysia, on our education system metrics, as well as on international assessments like the PISA and TIMSS, has improved. The question is whether we have improved enough in the time frame that we have set out for ourselves. And the reality is we haven't been meeting the targets that we have set in its fullest form, right? But I do think that there has been in the last 10 years more of a resolve to transform education than in the past. But I think the question is, and this goes back to our earlier conversation about like the sustainability of transformation initiatives, right? And ensuring that there is incentive and that there are structures in place to ensure that transformation initiatives are sustained within the system. And I do think that that's what we really need to focus on. The one of the challenges, and I think that it's a two-way street in terms of public sentiment, as well as what the ministry needs to do. One of the challenges that there's obviously always something new that people want to see change, right? And education is an always evolving thing, but we also do need to stick to our plans as well and be committed. And so I think that that's what the ministry needs. They need support from the political machinery. They need support from the public to be able to carry out the plans that they do have. And we do need to hold them accountable by getting ourselves educated as to what's in the blueprint, what's in the plan, and bringing this conversation up.
Okay, now I'm going to be the annoying journalist to say that there's one more thing I would like to see changed in the education system. Not so much to do with direct learning outcomes and saying, but something troubled me. I think recently I saw a survey that talked about discrimination in the school system, and the findings were very concerning. I'm just wondering whether Teach for Malaysia has a position, or whether you have observations about how we can address this, the deep-rooted discrimination that comes at such an early age and can likely, you know, shape a child's well-being growing up. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that that school is such a powerful place to be able to help kids to learn how to socialize with one another across lines of difference, right? And I think that one of the things that we are not necessarily good at doing is having this public discourse, or just having a discourse around differences. And the Ministry of Education has in recent years had a real big push to developing higher order thinking skills in students. They're called HOTS or KBOT skills. And I think that is something that we all recognize is lacking and needs to be developed. And this is where we really need to be able to invest in our teachers. We need to ensure that we have teachers that are trained, that teachers who are exposed, teachers who have the ability to navigate tensions, to hold dialogue with their students. And that's something that we really, really need to invest in with our teachers, that we need to do more in, for sure.
Yeah, something in terms of the teaching staff, philosophically, has the thinking been completely wrong-headed? You know, not allowing for really highly educated people to go into the foundational years of teaching, you know, keeping them for secondary and so on and so forth. So is that likely to change? I mean, what kind of resistance are we going to face if we push for a truly talent-based recruitment system into our education, into the teaching profession?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely something that we need to invest more in. And, you know, the ministry has been investing in ways to ensure that they're upgrading qualifications at every level. And, you know, Teach for Malaysia in itself is a Ministry of Education program in which we aim to recruit and bring in, really passionate and dedicated people into our classrooms. But I think the challenge that we need to see happen, or the thing that we need to see change, is that, and this isn't a Ministry of Education specific thing, right? It's a civil service thing, where oftentimes civil service progression is based on tenure, meaning how the number of years you serve results in your progression within the system. And this is something that that the Ministry of Education in and of itself cannot change without support from various other ministries as well. So they need support from JPA in order to be able to enact policy changes around employment. So what we need to see happen is we need to see younger people get into positions of leadership within the Ministry of Education at a much, much, much shorter period of time. So for example, in countries like the UK, you can see our partner in the UK, Teach First, they've had alumni from their programs become principals at the age of 26, 28.
Wow.
And that is something that is almost near impossible in Malaysia. Typically, it takes you 25 years to become a principal in Malaysia. And so we need the energy of our young people and we need to harness that. And that's what needs to change. But whether that is easy to do, it is a really complicated bureaucratic process to make that happen.
That's true. Soon Seng, thank you so much for speaking with us on the show today. It's been a pleasure and thank you for sharing your insights. Appreciate your time.
Never enough time, apparently.
That was our conversation with Chan Soon Seng of Teach for Malaysia. That wraps up our episode of Consider This for tonight. Don't forget, you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as our Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.